Your law firm is, in some way or form, using AI?
Every day. And I even use a particular AI model that I've been able to prime to deliver legal opinions, which are better than legal opinions that my own team could provide, yes.
You could frame a reality in which you are the victim and everybody else is the oppressor. But I will catch you out on that. I will know.
What are the common legal misunderstandings that happen usually in Dubai, or you often encounter?
That if you do something wrong, if you fall in business, if you give bounce checks, you will go to jail. You'll get arrested and go to jail.
People fear the law here a lot.
Is there like a certain law that people should know or be aware of about when they're coming to Dubai?
Yes. The crime.
I have a wonderful guest with me here. Of course, I'll leave that to you to introduce yourself and just tell me your name and what's your position.
My name is Ahmed Odeh. I am a lawyer, educator, and father living in Dubai. So I am Palestinian. I was born and raised in Abu Dhabi. And my father came to Abu Dhabi in 1975 from Baghdad. And at the time, you can imagine that there was almost nothing available here. I started working with Abu Dhabi National Insurance Company as a lawyer there. And then soon enough, in 1984, he set up his own law firm. And then he retired in 2014, where afterwards, me and my brother, Omar, we took over the firm by then. And till date, almost 20 years in, I am a second-generation lawyer in this country.
Clearly, you're telling me that you have been helping your family with the business of the law firm. What is it like being a lawyer in Dubai?
It's complicated. As an expat, or at least a non-Emirati lawyer, it's definitely interesting to be a lawyer here because you're not treated as an advocate because the word advocate is reserved only for Emirati lawyers. So you are essentially a legal consultant. So When you're faced with this type of reality, you have to also understand that there are limitations to how you can practice the law. For the most part, you're an authority on everything that happens in terms of the law in the UAE. Just because you're non-Emirati, it's unacceptable for you not to understand the law. And if anybody approaches me and says, "Hey, are you a lawyer?" I'm like, "Yes." They'll start asking me all kinds of questions. It doesn't have to be, on commercial laws. It can be on divorce, on real estate, on anything. And they will assume that I will know about it. It's very similar to going to a doctor and then you understand that not all doctors are the same, right? They got different specialties. But in this country, if you're a lawyer, you're automatically assumed to know pretty much everything about the law.
Do you feel like yourself that you have finally understood a lot of the laws that are going here in the UAE?
I think I have a good grasp, at least a good understanding on the fundamentals on how the law operates, how judges think, how authorities act, and how the authorities act between each other as well, how a bank acts towards the central bank or how the central bank works with the court. So these types of sort of nuances between authorities is very important for me on a practical basis to understand, okay, this is what the law says and how it gets applied in reality.
How does one find a great lawyer, basically, for the things that they want?
You have essentially two kinds of lawyers in Dubai, or in the UAE in general. You have those that go to court, or those that understand what it means to go to court, and those that don't go to court. They don't touch the justice system at all. All they do is sit down behind a computer and accept the request to draft contracts and do opinions and what have you, right? And the people that go to court are the ones that usually, get involved in the nasty disputes, the juicy problems, the stuff that you like to hear on the news and social media, right? This guy got caught because he was filming in public, or this guy was swearing. This guy, said something about the government, about the storm in Dubai. So these things, these are like, they belong to a completely separate a tranche of lawyers. They're called litigation lawyers, of which I am one of them. So I actually did both. I did litigation and I also did, I still do rather, transaction work, right? You want a contract, I'll draft it for you. But if you want to go to court, I'll take your case as well. I don't mind that.
Yeah, I'm sure you find the other one exciting, more exciting, other than just sitting in the desk job and writing a contract. I'm sure the one in the TikTok you usually do is much more you as a person that you enjoy.
It's going to court is much more visceral.
Mm.
And there is a direct direct result between going to court, getting a judgment, and the effect it has on your client and the opponent as well. You can see that the client benefits or not from the result or the judgment that comes out at the end of the day. And many a times I do feel that I've genuinely made an impact in people's lives and in this world by virtue of the profession I'm in, by going to court, as opposed to doing transactional work, which, yes, does have an effect, but it's not an immediate effect or one that you could see.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's just go a little bit back when it comes to your legal profession. Who was really your mentor when it comes to building you up throughout your legal career? Or has been the biggest influence?
Yes, I think as far as mentorships are concerned, it's difficult to isolate a particular mentor. But when it comes to influence, be it good or bad, it was my father. Now, note that my dad wasn't exactly the best influence in terms of being a sort of a lawyer and mentoring, or being a lawyer supervising a junior lawyer. We had lots of disputes, me and him. We oftentimes used to get into a lot of arguments, fights, shouting matches and all that stuff in the office and at home.
Is that part of being a lawyer?
Is it part of being a lawyer? I think it's just personalities, really.
All right.
Right? So we both had egos. His ego was definitely bigger than mine, and rightfully so. Of course, it has to be. Throughout the course of 10-12 years of doing business with working with him side by side and doing business in and out of the legal profession, I learned things, what to do, what to say, and what not to do, and more importantly, I think I learned a lot from his mistakes.
What kind of mistakes, you would say?
Business mistakes. So one thing I knew and I still know how to do well is manage a law firm. And I believe that I excelled at that at a very early part of my career. And I knew that there were things that I could do from a management perspective that are better and that could really have an impact. Yes, my dad was and still is a better lawyer. But these things, when I used to see my dad make mistakes at work in terms of management of managing the business, I would look at those mistakes and I think, I will never do that.
Can you share an example of that?
It's really hard. Okay, the simplest mistakes that my father would do is improper hiring, right? He wouldn't vet candidates properly. He would hire candidates based off, the way they looked or the way they acted or something that they said during the interview that really, triggered him. And sure, he might have that sort of, innate skill to know how someone will perform at work. But then when the person shows up at work, you'll find that he's arrogant, doesn't know how to use Microsoft Word. You know, he might be good at one part of the law, but he's bad at the rest. He doesn't know how to communicate with the staff. And similarly, when it came to firing, my father would oftentimes use me to terminate people because he wouldn't like to confront them directly. My dad was a little bit of an introvert. And I didn't like that. If you hire someone directly, you should be the one to fire them if you don't want them anymore. I think that is just simply, part of life. I think it's part of business profession that,
But does you think as part of any business, as a CEO, as a owner of that business, you have to handle both being the person that is able to hire and at the same time being able to fire the people? Maybe he was trying to set you up when you take over the business.
Yeah.
I think they're able to handle both.
Yes, of course. Maybe he is involuntarily, indirectly. And that's okay. I was, I still learned from that regardless.
My father has been one of the biggest guidance when it comes to what I'm doing today. I never truly understood him when he was trying to advise me throughout the years. Every time he was trying to say, Hamid, you should go read as much as possible, gain as much knowledge, be out there, do the things that God has given you with the talent that you have. Whether it's your presenting, whether it's your mind, whether it's your health, use it to the most. Be the best that you can be with whatever God has given you. So it took me some time to really just understand him. He was constantly just advising me throughout the years. It took maybe 10 years of my life until I actually began to understand, okay, my dad is trying to guide me for the right reasons. Now, usually we don't feel that in the present, but we always feel that later on down the life. We're like, maybe he was right. Yeah, I should have. I know exactly why he's doing what he's doing right now. It's like you get to understand and you feel like you're less arrogant because now you reach the point where you're much more understanding and appreciative that the only people in the life that really look out good things for you is your parents most of the time. I would say like the father and the mother, they usually don't have anything to gain from return from advising you and giving you those.
I agree. That's why I said he was the best influence. In that sense.
Okay, we talked a lot about what is the life of usually a lawyer, but how would you balance this, your personal life, with the demands of that career?
It always overlaps. If you're a lawyer, especially a business entrepreneur, or you have your own practice, your own law firm, don't ever think that you're going to have a 9-to-5 job. It's always going to sort of exceed the 9-to-5 and most likely going to be a 24/7 job. You're going to have emergency call-outs to the police stations. You're going to have breakdowns. You're going to have issues with your staff, with clients. It's never going to be a smooth ride. By virtue of the profession itself, you're going to have to expect that there's always going to be a tumultuous ride. It's almost always, especially in the litigation field, going to court, it's never going to be smooth sailing. Something or will always happen. Something, an incident will always take place.
Just going back a little bit, how many years have you been in the law?
It's been 20 years now.
20 years. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
That's a very long time. Do you feel any regret when it comes to the time that you spent less with the family, for example, than compared to spending in your job?
Yes.
And what would you advise your younger self if you're going back 20 years back? What would you do different?
I regret taking my job too seriously. I regret that sometimes or oftentimes a client is not right. And that their wants and demands should not always be agreed to and acquiesced. And that I should not forego my weekends, my after hours, my family time, or friends' time to listen and to just go and do some work for the client, which will oftentimes, if any, will never be appreciated or even paid. These are some things that I do regret, because at the end of the day, we have to put a boundary to to everything that we do. There has to be some kind of boundary. Otherwise, we'll lose ourselves doing it. And I did. I did lose myself in this profession. And part of it is also I lost. I got divorced partially because of that. And it was, I really did not know how to balance myself. And now at this age, I realize that it's looking back, it wasn't worth it, all that stress.
Do you find that in terms of this life balance work, like, does it also affect the hobbies and interests that you have as well, other than this work thing that you're, do you have certain hobbies that you wish you would be able to be more enjoying than working in your job as well?
Yeah. I would have loved to do more sports.
Sports. What kind of sport?
I enjoyed baseball a lot.
Interesting.
In fact, anything that involves a bit of reflexes, similar to paddle tennis and these things, I very, very much enjoy and dedicate time to. And I find myself unable to do that. In fact, the only time I do have is just to go to the gym. And, spending time in the gym an hour and a half, plus or minus because of travel, that's pretty much as much time I could have these days, which is unfortunate. I would have wanted to do more hobbies, to have more hobbies than that.
Before we end this part of the chapter, but what would be your advice for yourself as a younger self back 20 years back?
Care less about what people think about you. And know that, especially when growing up, people will be jealous. people jealous of how you look, of your age, of your energy. See, one thing I always noticed about me is that I generally have a lot of energy during the day, and I'm very animated. People don't like that. I used to always get comments from friends and family and just people around me. Calm down, Ahmed. Calm down. You're too hyper. You're too much, right? That pissed me off. I never understood why. They always used to say that to me. They used to make me feel like there's something wrong with myself. No, actually, they wouldn't be able to handle my energy. I had a lot of energy. And then when I meet people that have that kind of energy that I do, I was like, hey, that's amazing. Can I be your friend?
Do you feel like a lot of people don't really understand you as a person? Why is that?
I don't always stay in the same state. I like to shift around, and I don't just want to be a lawyer. I don't just want to be a family man, or I don't just want to be an educator. I want to be always more. I want to always do something more so that I can make a better impact for myself and for the world, the people around me. And that is uncomfortable to a lot of people because for them, I'm not being consistent.
Well, what I liked about you, like 2 days ago or yesterday, I was watching your TikTok live. And, you know, I don't see much lawyers going TikTok live and pretty much answering the questions of people. What lawyers usually do is like, hey, you have a question, you have a problem, come to me. We'll consult, give me some money.
Pay me money.
And then I will give you the answer. That's usually the case. But you're just there out there telling the people, let me know what's your problem and let me try to help you understand your problem, and then maybe we can solve something together. Which you have that more of emotional intelligence. You got that empathy that most of the lawyers, I think, they lack. They just think about the money. I don't care what the client feels. I don't care what he's facing in terms of his challenges or problems. As long as he has money, I'll try to solve it for him. But other than that, I'm not going to help him. I'm not even going to listen to him. That's the thing. Why does it feel like you want to do this exactly?
Why do I do this without money, without getting paid for it?
Yes.
My purpose is to help people self-advocate. And I think that's coming from a lot of sort of childhood trauma and issues because I used to get bullied a lot. I used to lose a lot of arguments. Mm-hmm. Every time I get into a discussion, an argument, anything, I would lose. Either because I didn't have enough understanding or I didn't have the charisma. Whatever skill, name your skill, I didn't have it. I would lose pretty much everything in my life. Get beat up, all that stuff. And I would not know how to defend myself, let alone asking people to defend me. Forget about that. No one wanted to defend me. In general, nobody likes to defend a loser, especially a loser that can't defend himself. And I hated that. I like to help people self-advocate because at the very minimum, they can do something about their lives. And even if they can't, at least they know someone that knows better than them. So even if they don't, they can't help themselves, they know somebody that can, which is at least, at the very minimum, it's a lifeline. Yes, okay, fine. There might be some money attached to it, but now you know that there is somebody out there that knows this better than you, that can do this better than you. Whereas previously you didn't, because not everybody would trust lawyers. In fact, most people do not trust lawyers.
Why is that?
That's because it's been ingrained in us, and rightfully so, over the course of many, many years, that lawyers like to overcharge and underdeliver. We don't give value. We just, you know, get paid for the way they look and for acting or being smarter than the person in front of us. Whereas in reality, it should be the opposite. We get paid so that we can dispense information and advice so that you can take that and become a better person or a more responsible person.
You know, going back to the business side, like what was some of the challenges when you first started taking over the family business? I'm sure you had a lot of challenges when it comes to that. And if anyone were to start the law firm, like what should they know about it? Like
exactly. When I first took over, even though I've been in the business and in the family business for many, many years, nobody trusted me. Nobody believed in me. No one believed in my leadership, in any decisions that I've done. So just because you're on the top of the food chain, just because you are a manager, it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to sail the ship. Because people still, especially when you're talking about professionals, seniors, people, you know, lawyers, right? If they don't trust you, they won't do what you say at the very, at the worst. At the best, they'll do it, but reluctantly. And at the same time, they'll look for other opportunities. So I've had lots of people that decided that left the business. I've had people that stole from my business. I've had people that, you know, sort of breached my trust and all that. All of this I've gone through. And over the course of many, many years, it took a very long time for people to finally start to realize that, you know what, maybe Ahmed has an idea or has a bit of a direction as to where he should be going.
And was there like any specific challenges just always in your mind, like no matter how many years of experience you had, this challenge still exists when running a law firm?
Yes, the unknown. We are not the judges of any case. We don't deliver any outcomes or judgments. So that risk is always there, especially when you take a high value claim or a high risk claim. You tell clients that, hey, we'll do our best to win your case. And when you don't win the case, it hurts. It really does hurt. And it hurts the client and it hurts you as a lawyer. And you can kiss your fees goodbye. Any fees that you may have agreed upon with the client toward at the end of the case, you're never going to see that. Even though as a lawyer, you're rightfully entitled to it. These are the outcomes that, you know, would be equivalent to ordering something from Amazon and not getting it delivered, right? Because these are risks that we always have to take.
It's kind of like a customer service with a reputation. What are you doing is you're providing your service. And if you're not winning the case with lawyers, sometimes that reputation is just spread around. So I'm planning to take this lawyer as part of my, going to defend me in the court. And they say, no, he's just terrible. He's always losing cases. And this is this reputation like really affecting lawyers today in Dubai when it comes to that? Like who wins the most amount of cases and who's losing cases?
I'll put it this way. Say you want to get eye surgery, you want to get LASIK. And you know about this doctor that does fantastic LASIK surgeries. And you go and check Google reviews and reviews on all the websites. What do you filter? The 5-star reviews or the 1-star review?
I try to look at both. For me, I'm an exception.
He did 99 perfect surgeries, but there's one surgery, there's 1-star review of a surgery has gone wrong. Would that worry you?
The thing is, reviews would not be the only variable I would look into. It would be one of the things that I'll do. So I will have a criteria. Usually my thing is like, okay, I got to know the person who's going to operate in me. Similar to you, if I was going to hire you as a lawyer, I got to know who you are. So am I building that? I feel like there should be a type of relationship between the client and the one who's providing the service. It's very important for me. I don't know about the other people.
Okay, I'll put it in a different way. I represent a family business where the first generation, the father, is now slowly sort of handing over his business and his investments over to his kids, his sons. And the father has been working with me for about 7-8 years. And he called me the other day and he said to me, I told my kids to work with you, even though they have other lawyers. I told my kids I never lost a single case with Ahmed. That's what mattered to him. He said, I worked with Ahmed for so many years and I never lost a single case. He didn't say customer service. He didn't say fees are too high. He didn't say any of that. That's the only statement, the only thing that he told his kids. Why? Because his kids have cases now and they want a lawyer that they can trust, right? The professionalism and the service and the value and the relationship, that's all counts. It all, of course, you know, is there. But what takes precedence is how many cases you've won or lost. So to answer your question, yes, reputation of number of cases won or lost is a big, big deal. It's a big deal with law firms. If you lose a case, everyone will know, at least the people in the industry.
And when it comes to your also going back now to your firm, how does the AI play a role in this? I'm sure like we heard about the generative AI, how it's just writing for you. There are AIs that basically can take all the information that possibly you can get and then recommend consultation based on that. What's your thought on this?
Fantastic. AI has been, the best value that we got out of AI right now, at least within what, a year and a half, 2 years of AI being in existence, is that it helped mediate or bridge the gap between non-Arabic speaking lawyers and non-English speaking lawyers, or rather people that speak English as a second language. So I'll give you an example. Most of our clients are non-Arab speakers. Okay, so they send us stuff, paperwork, and court documentation in Arabic. And these people, these clients don't speak Arabic. So what do? I send it to my non-Arabic speaking lawyers. And what do? They take the court judgments or the court notifications, whatever it is, which is in full Arabic, not a single word of English in that. They take it, they upload it on an AI platform, and the AI platform translates it instantly into English in a language, in a form which is much better than if they would have sent it to a legal translation office. Can you imagine the kind of smooth communication that these people would have with lawyers and with clients? Because obviously, if you can translate a court paperwork in Arabic to English, you could do the opposite. You can translate a memo, you can translate anything. So it's been fantastic for us. Right now, everybody in my staff speaks perfect English. They all send amazing emails.
So pretty much AI has made it so simple compared to past, where you had to pay a legal translator who translated it. It'll take some working days, but now you can have something within an instant.
Yeah.
It's that simple. So your law firm is in some way or form using AI today?
Every day. Yes.
So the moment it just came AI, you just started implementing it? And
yes. Right, and I even use a particular AI model that I've been able to prime to deliver legal opinions, which are better than legal opinions that my own team could provide. Yes.
Wow. Well, that's really amazing.
It's really good.
You never thought of making this as a service?
I am.
All right.
That's exactly what I'm working on.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Now, going into some of the things that most people would want to know, what are the common legal misunderstandings that happen usually in Dubai, or you often encounter in Dubai?
That if you do something wrong, no matter what that is, if you fall in business, if you give bounce checks, you will go to jail. Mm. You'll get arrested and go to jail. That's the biggest misunderstanding, and rightfully so. I completely understand, because previously, only a few years ago, that used to be the case, where if you, let's say, you didn't, your business failed, and you have supplier debts and bank debts and so on, you wouldn't be able to start over, and basically everybody's going to be after you, and you'll be arrested. But now that's not the case. Now, you have chances. You got second chances. You got third chances. You'll be, somewhat banned from travel, but you won't be arrested on the spot in a mall or anything like that. Obviously, if you get caught with like class A drugs, then yes, you will be arrested, right? But for commercial matters, that's not the case. No.
Interesting. And do you think that there's a lot of people here that with this misconception and misunderstanding, they have fear, some sort of fear when it comes to that?
People fear the law here a lot. Even though the law says, actively gives rights, direct rights to people, to all citizens, expats, Emiratis, people still fear the law. And I think they don't understand. A lot of people still don't understand that law is not provided to you through Gulf News and Love in Dubai and Instagram posts. It's in the books. Now, the first thing that a lot of people would say to me in the comment section is law is in books and it will always stay there. No, it's not the case. How do you think lawyers apply the law? They don't check the news. We open books. We open all of these codes that the government, the UAE government has passed down in the past 45, 50 years, and we work on those. But you have to read them. If you don't read the laws, then you will never know, and you'll never know what you're entitled to.
Is there a certain law that people should know or be aware of about when they're coming to Dubai?
Yes. The Crime and Punishment Law of 2022 is the most important one. It is publicly available. And of course, the employment law, right? And the rental law, landlord and tenancy law of 2007. It's such an old law and is publicly available as well.
Where do you think is the best place to actually find those types of law?
There is a new website now. There is the government launched a new website that consolidates all of these laws together. And you'll be able to sort of, you know, pull them out and download them. I forgot the name of the website, to be honest. But I will, if we find it, we'll just, you know, sort of...
We definitely put it in the caption somewhere.
We'll put it somewhere.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah.
If there was like that one legal advice that you constantly find yourself repeating over and over in TikTok or Instagram, what would that legal advice be?
Take responsibility for your own decisions or lack thereof. Simple as that. I'll give you a simple example. The other day, somebody went on TikTok live, and the first thing that he said to me was this: "Ahmed, somebody took money from me." I said, "What do you mean, someone took money from you? What? You had money on the table, and someone just took that from you? Like, what do you mean?" And then he says, "Oh, I borrowed somebody money." I said, "Oh, you lent somebody money?" He said, "Yes," and he didn't pay it back. I'm like, "Fantastic! Thank you for providing me context." That person did not take money from you. You willingly gave it to him. But the fact that you said at the very beginning of the conversation that they took that money from you, you want to automatically remove yourself from the liability or the responsibility of this matter. But the reality is that, no, you gave that money to him. He said, "Yes, I did. I did give that money." I'm like, "Fantastic. Now we can have a discussion." And I don't have these people. And when they show up to my office, they know... You know, a lot of the clients do accept responsibility. That's why they're coming in and paying. But when you go on live, you're not paying for legal advice. Everything that you're asking for is completely unsolicited. So you could say anything you want.
You're pretty much anonymous.
You're anonymous, right? You could lie, right? And take zero accountability. You could frame a reality in which you are the victim and everybody else is the oppressor. But I will catch you out on that. I will know.
Any other interesting like case that you found out from those TikTok live that you've been doing?
Yes. Yeah. One stands out. There was a lady. I don't want to mention nationality because then it'll just get really...
It'll get nasty.
Yeah. She came up. She said, "Sir, I received a judgment yesterday. And the judgment said that I need to go to prison for 3 months. And then I'll get deported." I said, "Why?" She said, "It's because I stole bread from a restaurant." I said, "Really? So you're telling me that the UAE government will, you know, without any form of evidence, provide you, give you a 3 months imprisonment and deportation? What is this, North Korea? What's going on? Right? Are you trying to say that the UAE government is unfair?" And she says, "Yes, sir. This is what happened." And I said, "Fine, come to my office tomorrow. If I find, and bring the decree with you, if I find that the decree is truly unfair, I will appeal this case for you free of charge." She said, "Yes, sir." "And also one more thing." I'm like, "Yes." She said, "Well, I worked as a cashier in the restaurant and my manager promoted me. And he also claims that I stole money from the cash registry." I said, "Fantastic. Now the narrative has changed. You no longer stole bread. You stole money from the cash registry." She said, "Yeah, sir, that's actually what happened." I said, "Well, so you say something in the beginning and then now you twist it into something else. I'm sorry, I won't take your case because you started off with a lie." That's it. That's how it happens then.
I feel like as a lawyer, you always have to investigate what the people are saying compared to not only investing the case, but also the people who's telling you about their stories.
Yeah, yeah. I oftentimes have to find myself asking the same question twice, three, five times over to see if the answer is the same. And it's actually a psychology trick. You ask the same question multiple times and you see if the answer is the same. If it's not, if they change the answer, that means they've cracked and the truth comes out, right? Because my clients do that to me as well, because they can ask me the same question. And if my answer changes, then they'll get worried. He said, "Yeah, but the first My first time, you said something different than now, right?
So that was kind of like a reverse psychology. And you...
Correct. Yeah.
So maybe we can go a little bit about the psychology. Like, what would be some of the psychology, not tricks, maybe the experience that you've learned as a lawyer that you think will definitely benefit any person in any job or anything pretty much in their life?
So skills that you have as a lawyer that can be sort of...
Used everywhere,
pervasive.
Ooh.
There's many of them. I think negotiation is a good skill. That's something that you could use everywhere. You could where never take anything for face value. Any statement or anybody says to you, especially when you're dealing business or doing transactions, never take the first thing that someone says to you for face value. That's because that's usually what they want, what the other side wants. It's not what you want.
So do you mean like in terms of money, in terms of salary, in terms of what exactly when you take a face
value? It could be anything, right? It could be, let's say you want to, I don't know, you want to buy this business, right? You want to buy a business and the seller will say, okay, well, I'll sell it to you for $1 million. That's what he wants. That's definitely not what you want, right? So these are things that you realize that, okay, well, when you're doing law, there are different stories and different perspectives that you take into consideration when doing any deal, any transaction, or going through any dispute. That will always make you think, okay, let me try to negotiate. That's one of the skills among many, many other arguments. And that's, by the way, a massive misconception. And just because you're good at arguing doesn't mean that you'll be a good lawyer. In fact, people don't like lawyers because of the fact that they argue. So you should be the complete opposite of that. You should engage in a positive discussion that could lead to some kind of fruitful outcome. If you argue all the time as a lawyer, you will ruin, most likely, your client's deal or dispute, right? And the client will be like, what am I paying for? Just to argue on my behalf? You're not really facilitating any outcome.
Would you say it's different between arguing and convincing a person or convincing someone? Because usually when I think of a lawyer, he's trying to convince the judge that whatever the case that he's trying to approve of, this is the case.
Well, yes, an argument in court, of course, is warranted and is something that you need to have lawyers to do so on your behalf. But when you're arguing in nature sort of outside of court, that shouldn't be the case. You should have discussions and these things. Yeah, you raise a good point. That's probably the reason why lawyers like arguing, because they always think that they're in court. My wife tells me that all the time.
I think pretty much everything in life becomes sort of a court case where you're pretty much trying to convince everybody, like, this is the case. I object.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
So as an Emirati, do you feel like you have a better grasp of the legal system just by virtue of the fact that you're an Emirati?
It's not because that I'm an Emirati. I would say that anyone who has pretty much lived here for long enough, me or you, once they start seeing how the culture is here, how the tradition is here, and you start to get accustomed, you pretty much know everything that you should know in order to live normally here. Because the UAE government, the news, every institution or every news station or other places, they try to inform you of everything that's going on within Dubai. So whether you're on social media, whether you're watching TV, whether you're sitting there on your office space, you'll always hear news about the new recent laws. You'll always hear something about what's happening in Dubai. So you're always informed. And I don't feel like you'll face any trouble or you'll feel like that you will have a competitive edge, because anyone who's been long enough here, they get too used to this place. So no, it's not because I'm an Emirati. It's because I've been here for so long. I know what are the things that I can do and can't do as a person, not as a national.
And you do a lot of videos for the governments.
Yes.
Some of the videos, they hinge a little bit on legal videos as well.
For sure.
I don't know them top of my head, but I want to ask which laws you might have done videos of, or you might have found out about that you found quite surprising and you didn't know, especially knowing that you've been here your whole life.
Interesting thing is that I don't usually focus on the laws, but more on the services that the government provides. So every time I'm trying to provide, they give me a script from the UAE Media Government Office, I'm like, interesting. So there's not only a tourist visa or work visa, there's also a freelance visa, and as well, you can work here or work overseas and still be considered part of Dubai resident. It's like there's different sorts of services available for different types of people, no matter what's their circumstances. So whether you're trying to be a freelancer, whether you're trying to be working here as a job, or just you just want to live here, you don't even want to work for any entities, there's a suitable service provided by the UAE government. So the end goal overall is to showcase that UAE is agile and flexible for everybody.
See, that's what I was saying. Knowing the law is one thing, but then seeing the governments apply the law, and you, of course, as the end user, you trying to use such services, that's amazing. And using the sort of smart the systems that they have, and all these apps that they got, it just makes it so much easier for any user to access the legal system. So, for example, during the storm, and a lot of people, you know, their cars got destroyed and all that stuff. And they thought, okay, well, how are we going to claim for insurance? Now, previously, you had to call the police. They would show up to the car, and they themselves would take pictures, and they'd write a report. They'd ask you to come to the police station. It was a whole process. Now,
pretty much automated within an app. It's a Dubai police app. You go there, you type in, like, to whom it may concern certificates. Sorry. There you go. You apply it for the natural disaster.
Exactly. It's part of a legal process.
Yeah. Even for your car accidents, like simple car accidents, usually before you had to call the police, wait on the side of the road until they come, and they will take the accident report and give it to you and say, okay, everything's done. But now you just take a picture, done.
And people always used to complain that the police would side with whomever is more convincing of the police officer, right? I don't know if you remembered, but there was a time. And that when the police officer shows up, it's time to put up your convincing game. Try to convince him that who's at fault.
It does happen in certain cases, like, okay, you know, he hit me from behind the car, so he's the one who's in trouble.
Yeah, or so, he's this nationality, or
yeah. But I think now, with a lot of the services that are being available online, it's became much more easier to live here compared to any other countries. Usually, I feel. Like, even if I was trying to get a visa in another country, it would be much more complex compared to the U.S.
Yes.
UAE has made it so much simple. People to just come here, it's easy. Even if they want to extend their tourist visa, they can always extend it very easily.
Yes.
And that's what's really amazing about here, is that we're always agile. We're always looking for the best ways to serve the people. If you look at the recent news about the developers trying to provide everything back for what the properties have been damaged. The government's trying to provide for the people in terms of those that have been affected by the flood. So there's different sort of initiatives being planned just to serve the people. That's what the visionary leaders that we have. If it's not for them, it would have been something different. But
yeah.
They have blessed every opportunities, including me, to shape our paths for the future.
Correct.
As well. Now, going back to your TikTok thing, I wanted to ask about a certain video that you have mentioned. It was about the intellectual properties, or more of a copyright. There was a certain person who copied exactly your information that you provided through your video, and you felt like it was an exact copy. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Oh yeah, that was some Chinese influencer TikToker who I think assigned a bit of the work to his staff to do videos on his behalf, and one of them thought, hey, this guy's got good videos, let's promote the UAE through his videos and so on. So she started using the exact same script and tone, even the tonality of my videos. Just she copied that. But she used different, you know, backgrounds and things that, you know, it sort of adds a bit of a twist to it. And at first, when I saw those videos, I was like, this, you know, I'm like, I don't know if this is me. Like, this sounds like me, but it's not me. And then I started matching it with the videos that I have, and I'm like, whoa, that's exactly me, right? And a lot of people would actually think that her videos were more convincing. Now, the thing is, I had another TikToker friend of mine that called me up and said, Ahmed, you should not have done that video calling out the influencer, because you should take her sort of copycat video as a form of flattery. You should be proud of the fact that they're copying your videos, not that you have to sort of flag them down. Those videos have already been removed by now. And I thought to myself, maybe that's the case. Maybe I should have sort of let it go.
Most of us, like as influencers, we're always trying to look for the latest ideas out there in the content. But every time when you're thinking that you have that fresh idea, it's always has been done by someone else around the world, no matter what you thought of. It's rarely ever the case that you found something totally new that no one has ever done before.
Correct.
It's very hard. But you as a lawyer, having that information, can someone actually like sue us because we have copied the script, or because we have just take some of the information that they have given and shared it in a different form, paraphrased it?
Yes, it's possible. So if you copy it verbatim and you do it and you don't tag the original content creator, that is a copyright infringement. Which is encoded in law here. It's a crime. You can get punished. You can get fined. I have not seen it done before, because I believe that there's a lot of original content that is coming out of the UAE. Hardly people don't really sort of copy each other. Yeah, they talk about the same topic, but they don't really copy each other's content. It's kind of like one of those unwritten ground rules. You're a content creator, I'm a content creator. I love your content. You know, the amount of times I thought, man, I wish I could just take that, everything that Hamid said, and just, say it in my own way. But I know Hamid will figure, he will know. He'll look down upon me afterwards. He'll never look at me the same way again, right? So I've never seen it happen. And I hope it doesn't ever happen.
I think that people should think more about exactly what your friend has said. It's more of a inspiration, like, okay, people are really taking in what I'm doing and they're trying to be like me.
Yeah.
I'm on the edge. I'm at the front, front of whatever I'm doing. So whatever people are copying me, I'm one step ahead of that. And I always think of community as influencers. They should be working together, more collaborations with each other.
Yeah.
Because in the end, TikTok, Instagram, for me, whatever information that we're providing for the people to understand. Me and you, we're trying to give value to the people. So if it reaches more than, I don't know, maybe you copied me and you give it to someone else, it reaches to your audience in a different form and fashion. And that's extra people that get to receive that value, whatever you have given them. Now, what I find myself that is a big no-no, if someone was to take your content exactly as it is, copy it, and post it on their channel, for example. An entity can take a video of yours, just download it, and they'll post it on their social channel and pretend that Hamid has done this type of video for them, for example, talking about the values of UAE and what is happening there.
Oh, if you report that to Meta or TikTok, very quickly they'll remove it. It's not even like something that you have to go to police for.
It's not necessarily a police, but you feel like this is more of the ethical, more of that. That's what I would think.
Of course.
For sure. Now, going into the very last thing, if you were to leave these three final tips for your audience in Dubai forever, like this is what you leave and you retire, your lawsuit, you put it somewhere and that's it, khalas. Ahmed is going for a long retirement. What would be those three lawyer tips?
That's a lot of tips to give for a lawyer that's not getting paid to give them. The first one is, everything is your responsibility, whether you've done something or you haven't. Whether it's been done to you or not, everything is your responsibility. If you're an adult, you're over the age of 21, expect to be fully accountable for your actions or lack thereof. That's number one. So that basically means that you no longer see yourself as a victim in any circumstance. Number two, if you think that you're going to be, you know, skating by adulthood without knowing the laws, you're not being a responsible adult. So one of the sort of fundamentals of being a responsible adult, pick up a book and learn the law. Stop scrolling through TikTok and Instagram and even going through my videos alone, thinking that you're going to understand the law and you'll be able to protect yourself and self-advocate. That's if you don't want a lawyer. And I know most people do not want to deal with lawyers. So learn how to be your own lawyer and to learn about the law yourself. Number three, if you want to get into business in this country, and also thinking that you won't have to sort of review a contract, or you won't have to get into a court dispute, think again, because your value as an entrepreneur is also directly linked with how much law you know. So I would highly suggest also, as entrepreneurs, you guys need to learn the laws. Think of it as, for me as an investor, if I wanted to invest in Hamid, your business, and I asked you a few questions about how much of the law you know, and if you say, no, I don't care about the law, when the problems happen, I'll fix them. I won't trust you. I won't trust my money with you, because I won't trust that you know what you're doing.
For sure.
Because of that.
For sure.
So yeah. So basically, be responsible for everything, whether it's your fault or not. And second, know about the law. As a responsible adult, you have to know about the law for, at the very minimum, so you know how to self-advocate. And three, if you ever plan to get into business, also read about the law so that you can manage yourself and your business accordingly.
Wonderful tips. Yes. I especially agree with the last one, having a lawyer for your business contracts. That's 100% true. Now, where can people find you online or contact you?
It's difficult to contact me because I don't want to say it like that. That's really not nice. You can DM me over TikTok. You can. But I won't respond, especially if you're asking for free advice. There's too many people that do that. But if you want to contact me, the best way to do it is to go through my law firm, you know?
Can you the name of your law firm?
MILLawFirm.com. Just log on to the website, or you can go to the MIL Law Firm Instagram page, and you can check. There's various ways to contact me through there.
What's your TikTok?
My TikTok handle is Law by O'Day, and you'll find all my videos there.
Wonderful. Well, finally, what's next for you?
A talk show. I'm going to do a talk show soon enough, where I'll be talking about legal as well as social dynamics, and I'll bring live guests on the show, and I will be able to accept guests to come on and to listen to their problems and to provide them with advice.
That would be really interesting.
Yes.
It's like in-person law advice while doing a podcast at the same time.
Yes. I'm not going to be doing that TikTok, you know, just take my phone thing. We'll do it more professionally. Let's see.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it, Ahmed. And definitely, maybe we can have some collaborations. You never know.